Your skin is clammy. This grit behind your eyeballs. A solitary owl hoots. The world lays creepily silent.
Children of the night.
Then a shadowy figure emerges from the darkness.
The problem is 99% of the planet doesn't know who he is.
Who is that guy?
A rebel. A guardian of everything that's fair in this dog-eat-dog world. One man with an opinion, a studio hotline, and 5 hours to kill.
Let's do this thing.
Bad of the ball. Around Australia on the Triple M Network. Triple M! Welcome to The Night Shift with Luke Boner.
Good morning and welcome, or good evening, depending on where you are. Great to have your company. 133353. 133353 is the telephone number. Let's talk, let's chat. Suzanne, good morning.
Good morning, Luke.
How you going?
I love you. I love your show. Love listening to it.
Thank you, Suzanne.
When I can't sleep. I'm ringing you about the Wagga High incident and what's been going on. And, I've had a big thought about it the last few days. And I had a son that went to high school there, and he's now 40. He's 38 now.
38. Yeah, it was a long while ago.
Yeah, it's a long while ago, yes. And so bullying's been going on for a long time too. It's not just something that's just popped up in the last 10 years.
Oh, well, look, it used to be terrible when I went to school, but I thought we'd fixed it.
Yeah, I don't know. See, when I went to school, I was in an all-girls school, and you had a few girls that tried to stand over you, but you just learnt to stay away from them, you know, you didn't get involved with them.
Tell me, when your son went to school, was it an all-boys school?
No, it was a mix. It's a mixed school. It's girls and boys.
Yeah.
It's a lovely school. It's a technical high school. I just think he got stabbed in the arm anyway with a compass from a child, right in the arm. I'm not talking just a stab. I'm talking a stab. And I didn't know anything about it until he come home off the bus. And I took him straight down to the doctor, who gave him a tetanus shot straight away and told me to go and report it. And at that stage, the same principal wouldn't be there now, but I rang him and explained what had happened. And he basically said, well, would I come over in the morning? He'd like to talk to me about it and bring the son. And I went over, and he expelled the boy straight away, who did it.
Really?
And basically just said, well, you know, we're sorry about this. You know, it shouldn't have happened, rah, rah, rah. And that was sort of it, was left alone. And, yeah, and I sort of thought, when I saw this boy during the week with the punch episode and what happened to him, I thought only that somebody did video that and it was shown and we all saw it with our own two eyes, and I think it hit home harder than, you know, just knowing about it but not seeing it, you know? I mean, it's just something that shouldn't happen, not at school. You send your kids off to school and you expect them to be looked after and not, you know?
I've got some questions to ask you. The boy that stabbed your son.
Yeah.
He was expelled.
He had lots of problems.
Did you find out what eventually happened to him? Did he come back to school?
No, he's been, ever since he left school, he's been to jail a few times, I've heard.
Right.
He was a boy. I mean, my son, we knew him because at one stage he lived in the same place not far from where we lived. And he's always had emotional problems, and he had a mum who sort of took up company with another fella and remarried and things like that. And whether it had a psychological problem on the boy, I don't know. I've got no idea, but... he just had problems. But, I mean, he hadn't been at the school very long when he did this to my son. That was the thing. My son had been there a little bit longer than him. He came into the school. I think he did his rounds with different schools before somebody would take him on again, you know?
Yeah, look at...
Which is very sad. And I do think sometimes that's got a lot to do with it, you know? It's home life. And
well, here's a question then. And I'm not a child psychologist. But are kids... a product of their environment? You said that this kid that stabbed your son had problems, but he came from a troubled background. Are you a product of your environment, or are some kids just born bad?
No, I don't believe that. I had a principal say that to me once about kids are born bad, and I don't think that's true. I really don't think that you can label a child like that. I think it's what comes from when they're little tiny little things, the way they've been brought up. I only spoke to someone, actually it was my local doctor here a few weeks ago, He works at the jail and does work out there, and we talked about it, and he said, oh, you know, a lot of them out there are just wusses. They're not as bad as what people make out they are. And I said, I feel sorry for them sometimes. Not all of them, but most of them. I don't feel sorry for murderers, but I just sort of feel sometimes that it's the upbringing they've had, it's what they've come from, and he agreed with me.
1-3-3-5-3. Are some kids born bad folks, or are they a product of their environment? Give us a call and let us know. 1-3-3-5-3. Here's the other question. Mm-hmm. I wonder, is bullying worse at a same-sex school than a co-ed school? Do you think kids behave better when boys are mixing with girls? Or is it the opposite? I'd love to see the statistics.
Yeah, I don't know. Because as I said, I went to a top girls' college in Sydney, and there were bullies there in my days. And I'm 68 years of age, Luke. So, you know, when I say there was bullying, there was girls that wanted to shove you around or, you know, take your gloves off you so that when you went to go home from school in the afternoon, you never had your gloves on, so you got into trouble for not having your gloves. And just horrible girls. There was probably four of them out of the whole school that just caused trouble all the time.
Yeah.
And I see it that, there's something wrong there. It's coming from the home life. That's how I see it.
All right, let's ask the nation. It's another topic we'll talk about this morning. Are some kids born bad, or is it because of the environment at home? 1-3-3-5-3. Listen, thank you for kicking us off, Suzanne.
You're welcome.
And how's Wagga this morning?
Not too bad. Yeah, we've had big storms, a bit of a rainy sort of situation here this afternoon. Not too bad. But
I'm looking at the radar now. It looks clear where you are.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's actually clear. I'm just looking. The rain did go out to Tumut, which is near you.
Yeah, well, they had a big downpour in Wagga this afternoon. It was fairly torrential.
Yeah, it's moving out. It's moving out to sea now, but it's absolutely pissing down in Sydney right now.
Yeah, we're not getting the rain. The farmers are doing it pretty tough at the moment because, the canola crops have gone off really quick and everything because there's been no rain around the area, you know.
Yeah, well, let's hope you get some more rain. Listen, thank you for your call, Suzanne.
You're welcome.
Have a lovely day. Thank you for listening.
You're welcome.
Bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye.
You're listening to The Night Shift on the Triple M Network around Australia. Hey, good morning. Just some feedback to some of our stories this morning. On the post that Jess put on Facebook, are our schools safe? Are you confident your kids are safe? Gavin, what actually happens to these kids who commit these assaults? Do they get expelled? Do they get charged? Besides installing CCTV cameras throughout every school, I don't know what actions need to happen to prevent these incidents. Will that even be a deterrent? Most of these assaults, including this one, were filmed. That hasn't exactly deterred or prevented any assault in this case. Lauren says, my daughter is in year 5 and I have every confidence in her school. They take everything seriously and I'm told of any issues straight away, although I'm concerned about high school. The schools in my area don't have the best reputation, but I guess every school has issues. And Robert says, schools are far from safe. A month or so ago, I was talking to two of my young cousins that are in years 8 and 9. And they were telling me how bad it is. It's absolutely disgusting what they told me. Every lunchtime, students have organised fights just to pick on someone and film it, or film class altercations with teachers. Shocking. There's these smartphones, they can film everything now, can't they? And what Robert's saying there is that they're deliberately doing it. And then they upload it, they put it on Facebook, and they think they're famous. New Zealand has banned foreign home ownership. Should Australia do the same? Was another question we asked. Daniel says all foreign ownership should be abolished. All foreign-owned property should be recovered. This way we can never be owned by anyone but Australia. Farms, land, any property. Charles, definitely foreign ownership is why kids can no longer afford houses. It was good for a while but is now out of control. Give them 5 years to get out or we resume the homes. Geez, that's tough. Kevin, we're destroying our suburbs with overpopulation and high-rise apartments going up everywhere. Cranes crowding the skies. Something needs to be done. Now, you might remember, I spoke to Dick Smith about exactly this. Gee, when was it, Jess? Do you reckon about 3 months ago? I'll find out exactly because I've kept the interview and I might, if time permits, Jess, replay a little bit of it later on this morning. He says, we don't want a tax base like the United States of America. He says, we don't need our population to grow anymore. September 7th, was it? I've kept the interview. I'll replay a little bit of it for you a little bit later on. Have a listen to what he has to say. It's very interesting. Anyway, 133353. Let's continue the conversation here on this Friday morning across Australia. G'day, Charlie.
How are you, Luke?
I'm good, Charlie. How are you?
Fantastic. Thanks for having me on.
Thank you for calling. What's on? What's on your mind?
I just want about the subject of that lady and about the kids' upbringing.
Yeah.
And, yeah, are they a product of their own environment? I totally agree with that. My father was... I'm Italian, obviously. My father was a hard man.
Yep.
And, you know, I mean, if you played up, stuffed up, he'd let you know. Yeah, and I mean, we all got a kick in the backside, you know, for doing things wrong. And at the end of the day, look, I'm 54 years old. My father passed away last year.
I'm sorry to hear that.
Yep, I think it was just a bit of an accident. But anyway, life goes on. Look, he's taught me, he's taught the whole family, actually, respect.
Mm.
You know, we do anything wrong, he would just have to click his fingers and we know we'd be in trouble. And look, and at the end of the day, Luke, what he has taught me I live in Shepparton, obviously. I'm pretty well known in Shepparton. My father was pretty well known in Shepparton. And he often got told, oh, you've got a wonderful family. They respect everyone. It's how that, you know, how he brought us up is how I brought my kids. My kids, I've got a son that's 20, a daughter that's 18, and I give lots of comments.
Yeah.
I own my own business.
Yep.
And they say, you have got two wonderful kids. They speak to you nicely.
Mm.
So, yeah, I think what my father's taught me, I've brought to my kids. And also, I kept my kids busy with sport. Keep them in a good environment. Don't let them roam around the street. I remember one night, me and my son were going to work. I own a transport company, and we happened to be, you know, we had to go in at midnight to do a couple of things.
Midnight?
We sort our freight and all that. And anyway, and as we're coming home, he was only younger, he said to me, he said, Dad, can we call the McDonald's? I said, sure, no worries. And there was about, you know, half a dozen young kids, probably about 10, 13, just standing outside of McDonald's, mucking around, and my son goes, Dad, he goes, if that was me, would you kick my backside? I said, of course I would. He knows that that's how he was born up, you know, not to do that sort of stuff. And what are the kids doing running around at midnight?
Mm. I've often talked about Father Chris Riley, who works in western suburbs of Sydney, a Catholic priest who practices what he preaches. And he works for an organisation called Youth Off the Streets. He told me once that he had a 5-year-old,
yep,
a 7-year-old and a 12-year-old roaming the streets one morning. And he said that they felt safer roaming the streets than they did back at home. How sad is that?
Oh, absolutely. Oh, look, I probably agree with him too. You know, I could tell you another story about some people that I know. You know, the father he's a troubled person. You know, he's always in the trouble with the police and, you know, this and that. And his young son, he's just a rebel, he is.
Mm.
So I'm a great believer, you know. He's a product of your own environment.
Yeah, you are. But I'm asking the question, are some kids just born bad?
No.
No, you think all kids are good?
Absolutely. It's how they're brought up, Luke.
Okay. All right, Charlie, well done. I'm sorry to hear about your dad.
No, that's okay.
But it looks like your son's in good hands.
Absolutely he is.
Yeah.
Yep, absolutely.
Okay, mate, you take care.
Thank you, bye.
133353 is the number. Plenty to talk about this morning. Kent, g'day.
Hey, how you going, Luke?
I'm good, Kent. How are you? Whereabouts are you?
Yeah, mate, I'm on the sunny coast, mate.
And what are you doing right now?
Ah, mate, we're working the night shift, mate, same as you bloke.
Yeah, we're all having a slog. What do you do?
I work on the roads, mate, Sparky, so yeah, just good gig, but yeah, it's night shift, a bit of everything, so it keeps us busy.
Tell me, before you launch into whatever it is you're gonna launch into, I had a couple of calls last night and there was a big story out of Perth yesterday that people who work at night on the roads having a very hard time with other motorists not adhering to the modified speed limits. Do you find that? Are motorists pretty courteous to you guys at night, or is it hard work?
No, it's not, mate. It's pretty abysmal some nights, eh? Like, just, unless you've got, it's just, you put a posted speed sign and they're just, there's no recognition of it sometimes, just depending to where they are and what they're doing. So, but yeah, like, most people are courteous, especially if you've got red and blue flashing lights there. It's pretty, they slow down then. But
Red and blue flashing lights pull you up very, very quickly.
Well, yeah, it's good.
But I want to start an awareness campaign here on the night shift, because we go right around the country at this time of night when people are working on the roads.
Yeah.
And I just want to make drivers aware that you guys don't choose to work at night. You work at night because that's when the traffic is at its least.
Yeah, that's true, mate.
If you guys were working during the day, imagine the drama then.
Well, yeah, it'd be chaos. People would be whinging, going, oh, far out.
Yeah, that's right.
Driving here and there and everywhere, you know. Like, oh, you're holding us up. So
that's right.
That's why we do it at night time, mate.
So please, folks, if you see people working on the road at night, put the anchors on, adjust to the new speed limit, and just a little bit of courtesy. It doesn't hurt, please, because these guys are doing the best they can. I'm just trying to get that message out there.
Yeah, it's good.
And 133353, if you're out there on the roads working, tell me what's your experience. Now, Kent, what is it you wanted to talk about?
Well, mate, I think a pretty good issue that you had a discussion last night was the whole sleep pattern and the sleep exercise thing that you do with that you've got talking about telling your brain that your brain signals how many hours you want to have, rather than the perspective about I better go to bed so I can get some sleep. Well, I actually did that last night when I got home from night shift. I timed myself when I went to. I said, right, I'm going to go to bed. Then I went to bed at about quarter to five in the morning, and I said I'm going to have 7 hours sleep. And I got up at 11:42 that same morning, so 7 hours pretty much.
It's funny you should say that, Jess. I too had that in mind, and I set the alarm for seven. But I said to myself, I need at least 6 hours sleep.
Oh.
I didn't say I've got to wake up at seven.
Yeah.
Well, I slept for 4 hours and I woke up feeling good.
Yeah.
I wasn't too good when I got to work. Asked Jess, I was a bit grumpy. But if you'll pardon the expression, it was my bladder that woke me up. And then I went back to bed. I went straight back off to sleep again.
But the inside of that, mate, is I didn't even set an alarm. Because coming off night shift, I didn't set an alarm. I didn't say I'm going to set my alarm to this. I just said I'm going to have 7 hours sleep. And I woke up bang on 7 hours. Didn't intend to.
Yeah.
And so I'm going to try it again, and I'm going to give it a good hot crack at it and see how it goes. But if it's everything's been within your mind too, mate. Your mind works in pretty mysterious ways. So yeah. So it's I think it's bang on idea. I love that perception that you can, train your mind to do things that you want to do.
Can I ask you a question? I'm actually asking the nation this question. But
yep.
And it's a personal question, you don't have to answer, but do you sleep alone or do you sleep with a partner?
No, I've got a wife, yeah, yep.
Okay,
yep.
Honest question, do you sleep better with or without her?
Oh, probably with
okay.
Her, yeah.
Yep. Because I'm the opposite. I sleep better on my own. But Nick's going...
Yeah, that's good.
Nicky's going through a period now where Jess has her theories on all that.
Yeah, mate, that's because you're lonely and you're angry.
Yeah. But Nick's going through a period now where, she's got this thing called the Jimmy legs. And all of a sudden, her leg will go, boom! Just kicks out. Just kicks out.
Or is that because you're snoring, maybe?
She snores worse than me.
Oh, that's good.
Mate, she sounds like a chainsaw on asphalt.
Actually, I heard one of them. It's pretty loud. It's good.
Is she in bed? She's not listening, is she? But I've been repeating myself. I don't know, but I lived in Canberra for 6 months, and I loved it. I enjoyed it. I enjoyed just seeing her on weekends. It was good to miss her.
It's kind of like that too. You know what I mean? Like, it's with the amount of FIFO and how work, work's going and that. It's yeah, it's, you're pretty lucky if you get to sleep in your own bed most nights. It's sort of, yeah, it's one of those things, isn't it?
I actually prefer to sleep on my own now, and I do because I sleep during the day.
Yeah, yeah.
The only time we sleep in the same bed is on weekends.
My
sleep is all mucked up anyway. But no, just an interesting observation. Do you sleep better with a partner or without a partner?
Also on that topic before, Luke, that with the whole kids and, you know, our kids born bad. I don't know. Have you got a minute for that? Or
yeah, what? Please.
Yeah, I don't know. I just think it's I don't think it's they're born bad at all, mate. I think it's the atmosphere that they're around, the people that are around, the things that are instilled in their brains as kids before they reach adulthood. You know what I mean? Like that's I've seen plenty of kids, cousins, relatives, whatever, go and friends that have kids, and you know they change when they're at a different place or with different people for better reasons. Like it's a whole atmosphere thing. It's a learning thing. It's all their mental stability. If they're in a positive emotional environment, they're going to be way better than if they're, you know, being told to shut up all the time, or you know, mum and dad are too busy sipping on the old premix spirit cans, having, you know, getting blotto while the kids are trying to fend for themselves. You know, like that's going to instill negative atmosphere on them straight away. You know.
Yeah, I'm not a child psychologist. I don't know, but I just ask the question: is a kid's born bad or are they made bad?
Depends. Depends. Like, if you're not, are you going down the line of, are they born bad in terms of actual behavioural problem, like a chemical brain imbalance or something where they don't choose that, so therefore mum and dad have got to put more effort into, to you know, keep them on a happy medium to grow better or function better or whatever. So, or you're going down the lines of, are they born a certain way that they, you know, I don't think our kids born bad, because they can change. You can mold a child to benefit, you know, like to grow better in life rather than, you know, it's what they're instilled from their parents, really, isn't it?
Yes, it is. And some kids have got no hope.
Oh, and that's the sad bit, but that's why they have, you know, youth programs and things for young kids, and it's putting them in a positive environment and stuff like that, you know, like rather than walking the streets and, you know, like I've heard countless stories of young kids and, you know, teenagers that are blind at 12, 13 at 1 o'clock in the morning, and you see them walking up and down the street, and then we're working at night, and you go, where are your freaking parents?
Like, that's it.
You know, like it's just, and then, you know, and then you wonder, yeah, I don't know, it's a very interesting topic, but I do think that you can, if they're put in the right atmosphere and around the right people, they can change in a short period of time.
But
I mean,
my mind keeps going, and I've really enjoyed talking to you, Kent, but my mind keeps going back to that terrible murder of James Bulger in England. He was murdered by two young kids, John Venables and Robert Thompson. They were both 10 years of age. It was in Liverpool.
Oh, yeah.
And the brutality of that murder still shocks the world. And have a look at it. I don't want to go into it in too much detail.
Yeah, no, you're right. Yeah.
And you wonder, where did that evilness come from in John Venables and Robert Thompson? What they did was unbelievably violent and brutal.
Oh, I think it's that stigma of, I think, where does it come from? No one knows, what I mean?
Yeah.
That's like then brain snaps with people that, you know what I mean? They have a brain snap and all of a sudden they've killed two people and then themselves. So, and then they've lived in this happy family for years and grown up and whatever in a good community, and all of a sudden there's a triple homicide in their house, you know what I mean?
Yeah,
it's,
I do.
How do you can't get it. It's hard to even get your head around
it. How do you explain it?
Yeah,
no
worries, mate.
Kent,
thank you, eh?
Hey, mate, thank you. Thanks for keeping us company.
Keep your show going, mate. It's good on us for a night shift, mate. That's bloody good.
We're here for you guys. Don't you worry. You have a good weekend.
Cheers, Luke. Cheers. Cheers.
Shift
Jeff.
Your
See
mind into gear.
My brain starts getting weird this time of night.
Shift your way of thinking.
What are you thinking about?
The night.
It's going to be a good night.
Shift on the Triple M Network.
Hello. Yes, I was looking at a story the other day about sleeping positions that could be relationship red flags. Are you snoozing your way towards being single, was the title of the article. And it goes, sharing a bed with a partner is an opportunity to be extremely intimate, but it can also spark plenty of arguments. In fact, a recent survey found that a quarter of British couples admit to sleeping in separate beds. In fact, this is very interesting. Rows or problems in the relationship are behind 38% of couples' decisions to sleep separately, according to the research by Benson's for Beds. A leading life coach, Olga Lavuncha, who is the author of How to Be Selfish, says we should be keeping an eye on our partner's sleeping habits to avoid ending up in separate rooms or heading for an altogether more permanent separation. She believes the positions you and your partner adopt while sleeping can reveal a lot about the state of the relationship, because the subconscious mind controls how you arrange your body under the covers. Olga reveals the sleeping positions that could be red flags in your relationship, as well as the ones that indicate you're closer than ever. Spooning. She talks about spooning. Spooning is a common sleeping position among couples, and it demonstrates that one person in the couple is protective over the other. It can also reveal sensuality, as it leaves the person being spooned in a sexually vulnerable position. However, if the spooning turns into a chase and one of you has retreated towards their side of the bed while the other is following in an attempt to maintain closeness, there could be trouble. There could be trouble. Sleeping on your partner's chest. When your partner sleeps on their back and cradles your head in their arms as you rest your head on their chest, the message is that they are protective over you. If you're facing them in the fetal position, resting on their chest, it shows that you're comfortable to depend on them. But if you sleep with your head on their chest while your body is away from theirs, it shows you want more independence. Sleeping on your stomach. Sleeping on your stomach protects the front of your body, which can be an indication of feeling anxious or vulnerable. Then there's the bed starfish. If one person sleeps like a starfish, in which their arms and legs are splayed across the bed, it's an indication that the person is very selfish. She talks about playing footsie. If your bodies don't touch while you're sleeping, but one of you starts playing footsie under the covers, it indicates this person is craving emotional or sexual attention. Back to back and touching. If you sleep back to back with your bottoms touching, you're relaxed and comfortable with each other, she says. And then there's the snuzzle or the nuzzle. In this position, one partner rests their head on the other's chest. This is a nurturing position, apparently. Same level heads. If you sleep with your heads at the same level, you're connected. And if your heads are touching, it shows that you've got like minds and know what the other person is thinking. How do you sleep? And are you like me? I quite like sleeping on my own now. I have the perfect excuse because we sleep at different times of the day. But I like my own space. I like spreading out. I like having the remote. I shouldn't admit this. We have a TV in the bedroom. And I like having full control of the remote. 133353 is the telephone number. Just getting back to this story out of New Zealand. If you've just joined us, New Zealand has banned foreign home ownership. And I'm asking the question, should Australia do the same? There's a little more feedback that's come through on Facebook. Graz says, yes, we should have years ago. Maybe that way more Aussies could have a chance at being part of the great Australian dream. Brody says, I can't say that yes, then I'll be a bigoted racist, right? And Jeff says, I think they need to look at the stamp duty and look at the changes and try and make it a fairer market. First home buyers, zero stamp duty. A person that has lived in this country for at least 10 years, half of the current stamp duty. If you've been here for 5 years, full amount of stamp duty. If you've only just arrived in Australia, double the stamp duty. So plenty of feedback coming through. Should Australia follow New Zealand's footsteps and ban foreign home ownership? 1 triple three 53 is the telephone number. So there we go. Lots to talk about this morning. You are listening to The Night Shift on the Triple M network and affiliated stations around Australia. Give us a call, 133353, and we'll take your calls right after this break. Yeah, Paul McCartney and Wings, did you want to say something, Jess, did you?
I accidentally just spoke through the song, didn't I? To the entire nation. Instead of in your ear, I spoke to the entire country of Australia.
It was bound to happen one day.
You know, nearly a year and I've never done that.
I know.
Wow.
What's our first year anniversary?
December the 12th.
Is that 1 year?
Yeah.
So we're a little way off yet.
Yeah.
We're a little way off yet. But
if we make it, I could get fired after that one. So, good times. Well, it's been a treat, Australia.
It was only a matter of time. It's taken all this time. Because those little buttons, they look so similar, don't they? They look so similar. Oh, God, we'll miss Jess. 133353 is the telephone number. Those people on hold, thank you for being patient. I will get to you shortly. But a good mate of mine, John Kutis, an inspirational public speaker, has joined the program. He contacted me online a few weeks ago, said that how much he enjoyed the program. He lives on the Gold Coast, and we're responsible for keeping him up as well on some nights. And I invited John to come on once a week and just give us his 2 cents worth of some of the stuff that we talk about during the week, because we cover a fair bit. He's in Shanghai at the moment in China. He's on the line right now. G'day.
Hello, champion. How are you doing?
I'm going very well. Why are you in China?
Oh, mate, I'm doing a couple of gigs over here. You know, my inspirational speaking, and I've got a couple of gigs to do over here. A couple of good size ones, mate, too, which is pretty good. I hear that Jess might be looking for a job shortly.
Yeah.
So I'll be able to get her one. She's pretty good at talking.
Now, listen, John, if you've Googled him, if you've had a look at him, there's a link to John's Facebook page on our Facebook, or to your website. What is it? Where do we send people?
It's johncurtis.com.
Yeah. John.
Yeah, mate. How are you doing?
John has overcome amazing difficulties, and he's one of the most inspirational people you'll ever meet or you'll ever see. He has no legs, and yet doesn't stop him doing amazing things and meeting amazing people. And it's great to have you aboard, John. So you're in Shanghai. You're speaking. You're doing your inspirational speaking to Chinese people?
Yeah, mate, that is exactly right. I can speak a little bit of Chinese, like, you know, number 67, your lemon chicken is ready. but I have it translated when I'm on stage, and it goes great guns.
And how many people turn up?
Well, the average-sized crowd is about 14,000.
You're kidding.
Yeah, not bad for half a guy who grew up in a little country town. When dirt was a toy.
That is and how do you promote yourself in China? How do they know? What? I'm fascinated.
Yeah, well, I'm the lucky one that doesn't have to do too much promotion, but I've got people that actually do that. I've got managers and all that take care of all that sort of thing. So I just roll in, mate, like Elvis has left the building, do the gig and get out. I'm pretty lucky like that.
And what are some of the things you say?
I talk about, you know, life and overcoming challenges and just literally, you know, getting on with it, because the Chinese culture is so different to the Western world and the way that they live. It's extraordinary, actually. And I was just saying to Jess earlier on that coming here has actually changed me. I've been to more than 170 cities here in China now. It's unbelievable.
I was in China last year. I took a group of listeners. I found it a huge eye-opener. I'm not in a hurry to go back. You're in Shanghai, which is a lovely place.
Yeah, where did you go?
Oh, we went to Shanghai, Beijing. I couldn't breathe. I couldn't wait to get out of Beijing. The pollution was just unbelievable. But then
Yeah, that's why they don't have any birds, mate.
It's true.
They can't see where they're going.
It's true. We went on a five-day, five-night cruise on this beautiful ship up the Yangtze. We went through the gorges and the locks. Amazing technology. We went on a bullet train.
Yep.
No, it was very, very interesting. Went to the Great Wall. You have to go to the Great Wall.
Yeah, I've done that too, mate.
How does a bloke with no legs climb the Great Wall? I mean that with respect.
Right. Well, it took me about 5 hours and struggled through it. My boy was with me. He was 9 at the time. And I got, to tell you the truth, but I got halfway and I was ready to pull the pin. I thought, geez, this is bloody ridiculous. But I looked at him and thought, well, this could be the only chance he gets at doing this. So I rubbed the old heart a little bit and trudged on, and you know, 2 hours on later, we made it. We're sitting on the Great Wall of China. It was a wonderful effort, and it's something that I'll save it for the rest of my life.
Wow. Unbelievable. No legs.
Yeah, it was really good.
No legs. I know that you've been listening during the week, and there was a couple of topics that you wanted to talk about that have sort of sparked you up.
Yeah, the first one is, look, and I'm a big advocate for Philip Nitschke and euthanasia, and some people might find that weird, but I don't care. This is my opinion. And, look, I think that if it comes down to quality of life, Lukey, you know, and I think Victoria has just passed the bill where it's now legal in Victoria. Is that right in me saying that?
It's gone through the lower house. It's and not this week, the week after. It'll attempt to get through the upper house.
Right, well, that's why it got to me first, because I'm in the lower house. See, so it's I am actually a big fan of it, mate. I really am. When it comes down to quality of life, and let me ask you this question, and to all your listeners out there, if we allowed euthanasia in Australia, how much would it change the suicide rate? So what I'm saying to you is that how many people that are sick, that know they're sick, that know they're dying, end their lives prematurely because they know they're dying anyway. They kill themselves.
Mm.
Now, you know, that's a very, very interesting question to ask. And if we allowed euthanasia, that would obviously take that off the table. But, you know, we treat sometimes our animals better than what we treat treat humans.
That's right. That's right.
When it comes down to quality of life, we got to allow this euthanasia. We really do.
Well, it's halfway there. It's halfway there. We'll have to wait and see. But
I'm only halfway here too. Oh, jeez, we're on fire tonight, aren't we?
Oh, Jesus, John, you're killing me. You wanted to talk also about dangerous dogs. There was a fatal dog attack in Canberra early in the week. Terrible story. The dog is believed to have been a pit bull. The owner of the dog reportedly was nervous of the dog anyway. She was trying to save somebody. The dog had attacked somebody at 4 o'clock in the morning. The dog has been put down, but the dog had form. It had already mauled someone back in August. It probably shouldn't have been alive in the first place. Anyway, your thoughts?
Well, look, I really don't know about dangerous dogs. Are there really such a thing as dangerous dogs, or is it the upbringing that they had? It's like kids. You know, I mean, well, don't get me wrong, there are some bad kids out there. Like Jeffrey Dahmer was a bad kid, he was a bad seed, you know. But dangerous dogs and things like that, I think it's more the upbringing that these dogs are getting that turn them into wild creatures and things like that. But I'm not a big fan of big dogs anyway, Luke. You know, I mean, when I try and get away on my skateboard, I'm like Meals on Wheels, you know. And they don't want to eat me, they want to do other things, mate, you know. So I really am not a big fan of dogs off leads or anything like that. And dog attacks, you know, it's got to come back to the responsibility of the dog owner, you know, and how you are raising that dog and what you are getting that dog to do for you. You know, it can be a sad case.
Yeah, well, there you are. There's another question. Are some dogs more prone to snapping than others? Are there some breeds that just should not...
Do you think they are?
I think there are some breeds that are prone to turning than others, but any dog can bite. And
that's exactly right.
Any dog can bite. I think that usually it's a case of a bad owner. But there are some dogs I wouldn't have around children, and there are plenty of vets who would back me up. There are plenty of owners of those dogs that disagree. And we can...
I mean, there's some children I wouldn't around have dogs either.
Yeah, that's right. John Curtis is with me. We're giving us his 2 cents worth. Just quickly, I know that you wanted to talk about bullying at schools, and we're asking the question, how safe are our schools?
They should be a lot safer than what they are, let me tell you right now. We end up going to having our schooling system in Australia like what they have in the States, where all these kids on their way into schools are going to go through metal detectors and get their bags checked and all sorts of stuff. That's the way that we're going, and we've got to stop it before it gets that far.
That's what they do in America.
We need to take, hey?
In America, you go through metal detectors.
Yeah, you sure do, mate. You sure do. And you know what? Parents need to take some responsibility for their kids, and these older kids need to take some responsibility for themselves and pull their goddamn heads in. You know, you school is not a babysitter. School is a privilege, and you go there to learn and better yourself. You don't go there to you know, muck up and pick fights and bully on people.
Couldn't agree more. It's a very, very precious time. It's a time where you should feel safe. Listen, John Kutis, always good to talk to you. I'll catch up with you next week. Where are you off to now? Where's your next town?
I'm actually coming home on Sunday, mate. I'm in Sydney on Monday.
All right.
And then I'm home for about another week or so. And I think actually I'm coming back over here.
You're going back to China?
I think so.
And the average audience at one of your seminars is 14,000 people?
That's correct.
Unbelievable.
Yeah. Pretty bloody good, isn't it, eh?
You've done all right.
I remember the first time I went out on stage and there was about 18,000 people in the audience and went, holy shitballs, look at all these people. Scared me to death.
Wow. John, if people want to know more about you and what you're all on about, how do they find you?
Mate, they can go to johnkutis.com or find me on all social media. Lukey boy, I'm all over the place.
You are all over the place. And if you go,
I'm like a doorknob, everyone gets a turn.
You have a good day.
Thanks, Jim. I'll talk to you soon. Tell Jess to not butt in anymore, will you?
I know, she's unreal, isn't she? She'll never touch that button again.
Girl.
Have a good day, mate.
Thanks, brother.
See ya.
Bye.
Around Australia on the Triple M Network, this is The Night Shift with Luke Burner. The Night Shift.
That is Split End's Dirty Creature here on The Night Shift around the country. And good morning to our affiliate stations all around the place. It's great to be in Perth on Mix 94.5. Good morning to you. Good morning to 4TO FM 102.3 in Townsville and KO FM 102.9 in Newcastle. 133353 is the telephone number, but look, if you want to write in and ask a question, please feel free to, if you can get to a keyboard. You can either use our Facebook, The Night Shift on Triple M. You can send us a tweet at MMMNightShift or email nightshift@triplem.com.au. It's an interesting article I read online yesterday involving Tracy Cox, who was a well-known sex therapist slash expert slash relationship expert. And it's been revealed that many Australian women are bored in the bedroom. And we're asking the question, what are men doing wrong? If you want to ask a question, give us a call, 133353, or you can write into us. Tammy is our resident sex worker slash relationship expert. And she's had a look at this report, and she's got one or two things to say. And I've invited her on the program, and she's with me now. Hello, Tammy.
Oh, good morning.
Good morning to you. How have you been?
Oh, really well. Thank you. Yourself?
I'm good. Thank you for waiting up and to talk to us at this early hour of the morning.
Anything for you, Luke.
Oh, darling, stop it. Now, I sent you this article. Were you surprised?
No, not at all. It's a very accurate article, I think. There's some good tips to be learned from it. Everyone should give it a read, that's for sure.
Yeah. I tell you what, I'll get just to put it on our Facebook page and people can look at it in their leisure. But why are women bored in the bedroom? It's obviously the bloke's fault, is it?
Not always. Sometimes, you know, the woman fails to take the initiative or fails to have the courage to, I guess, point out what she wants, because we're not all created equal. I think I could condense it down quite simply, though, if we're going to go guy bashing and what men do wrong, it would be, you know, rushing it, you know, just expecting their women to be like porn stars, ready to go and you know, hot and waiting. But it takes a little bit of effort to get your woman fired up.
And is it a problem because you have men who come to you to use your services and they talk to you about their wives or their girlfriends?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And you've told me that. What's their number one complaint?
Well, actually, the number one complaint from married men is that they're not getting any affection. These are men who actually are most satisfied with a hug or a kiss or just a touch.
Yeah.
It's not even about the intercourse per se. It's about that connection, that affection, that intimacy.
Mm.
You know, the things that really women are, you know, supposedly after the most is exactly what men want.
It's interesting. What about when a couple in a relationship, what happens when their libidos are mistimed?
See, I think that's probably one of the biggest or the most common issue, and that can arise at any stage in a relationship, whether it be after the honeymoon phase passes and it's no longer new and exciting and you sort of fall into that routine and monotony of day-to-day life and trying to keep some, you know, fire in the sex life. But it can also happen with menopause and other, you know, ages and changes and, you know, prostate issues for men. So it's about, again, remembering that it's not all about the, you know, penetrative intercourse. There's a lot more to sex and intimacy than just that.
Yeah, look, and Jess just made a very good point, because we all work these strange hours. And it's, here's a question. Does working these weird hours, shift work, does that affect libido? Does that, especially if the bloke is working shift work and the wife or the girlfriend is home, your sleeping patterns are all over the place. You may not get to share the bed with your partner very often if she's at home, or not necessarily at home, but she's at home at different times. And that can add a lot of pressure, can't it?
Well, it can also make it a lot more exciting. If the bedroom isn't where you can get the connection on, there's plenty of other places.
Sure. but what I'm saying is your sleeping patterns are all over the place.
You know, I think that's probably one of the common mistakes that, you know, couples or you know, married couples or otherwise will make, is that, you know, you assume that sort of intimacy is for when you go to bed at night. Well, it can be all day, every day, just a touch, just, you know, a connection while you're cooking dinner, while you're doing the dishes, while you're putting a load of washing out on the line. You know, it's those little moments that, you know, if you give that, you know, attention and that affection, anything could happen.
Yeah. 133353 is the telephone number. Tammy, our sex worker. Can you believe we have a resident sex worker here on the night shift? You said something a little while ago that I've taken a note. I thought that was interesting. You said, we're not all geared up to be like porn stars. Now, never before in the history of mankind have we had such access to hardcore pornography. And you said that maybe women are bored because they're not speaking up and asking men to do certain things. I would have thought with the pornography that that's broken down a lot of the walls. Has it built up walls?
Well, I mean, no, a lot of the porn industry, a lot of the porn that's out there is directed at a male audience. And, you know, having seen a bit of it myself, see, you know, the women that feature in those films don't really need a lot of warming up. They're kind of ready to go.
And that's unrealistic, isn't it?
Well, absolutely. You know, it's something that, again, like you said, we're working harder, we're working longer, we're tired, we've got a lot of pressures, you got kids, you got, you know, money issues, and, you know, you're not just going to be ready to go at, you know, the crook of a finger. It takes some work to get that fire started, and it's definitely worth putting in that little bit of work, because you get a much better delivery. And libido is, you know, a feedback system in psychology. If the sex is good, the feedback is, gee, I want to do that again. If the sex is ordinary, painful, not in any way enjoyable, just a whole lot of mess, the feedback is, well, that was a waste of time. Why would I put myself through that again? So the more you can do to make the sex good and pleasurable for both parties, the more likely you are to want more of it.
Yes. The article that Tammy and I are referring to, written by Tracy Cox, She aptly named. She revealed the top questions that she's asked time and time again as a sex and relationship expert, and Tammy gets asked the same questions. Here's a question for you. It's mentioned in the article. What is the G-spot, and does it exist?
Yeah, look, I certainly believe that it exists. I know I have one, and I, you know, discussed it with some of the other ladies as well, and they certainly do. But, you know, it was a surprise to me. Some of the other women that I work with are actually unaware of where theirs is, and don't really know how to locate it. And we had that discussion, so a level for them.
So you talk to your colleagues who are professional sex workers, and some of them some of them have never discovered the G-spot.
That's right. Yeah.
Really? And they're professional?
Yeah. It was surprising for me, but, you know, hopefully now they'll you know, take the initiative to try discover it with, you know.
You should be doing the public speaking circuit.
Look, you know, watch this space. But it's something that it's different for every woman. I think that's the important thing to mention to men, is just because you find it in one woman doesn't mean that if you go directly back to that exact same spot that you're going to find it, you know, in every woman, because...
All right,
you know,
well, answer my question. Yeah. Where is it?
So it's on the anterior wall, or the front wall, or if you were, you know, facing... you know, if a woman's upright facing you, it's on the wall of the vagina that's closest to you, just inside, or it could be, you know, further up deeper. So it's generally along that wall, and it's along the wall where the clitoral root will run as well. So, and it's also along the wall where the urethra runs. So it's quite a sensitive, innervated area. And as the article mentions, for some women, even if you do find that spot, because it's got those other pieces of anatomy so close to it, it can be so intense and so overwhelming, the stimulus, that it can actually be uncomfortable. Now, I think if you're a woman and that's your experience, then that's where your vibrators and your self-experimentation will come into play, and you can learn to find out what actually works for you in that area, or even push through that discomfort barrier, and you may be surprised at what you get to.
All right. See, people don't. A lot of people don't know this stuff.
A lot
of people don't know this stuff. What are some of the other most commonly asked questions you get?
Look, I think it comes back down to that, you know, non-sex sort of intimacy thing. It's, you know, that touch, that passion, that connection.
What's the most commonly asked sex act you get requested that your male clients don't get at home?
Kissing and hugging.
Seriously?
Sad but true.
Isn't that amazing? I saw an ad for a brothel in one of the papers the other day, and you know what it said? It said, "We provide a real girlfriend experience."
And what that's talking about is that passionate service. So what that means is, you know, kissing, touching, multiple positions, not like, oh, we're just going to do missionary and that's all you're going to get, or we're just going to do doggy and that's all you're going to get. If you're in a girlfriend relationship, in a partnership, in a sex session with your partner, you'll often try multiple positions within that session. And, you know, there's a lot of kissing, there's a lot of touching, there's a lot of, you know, fondling and hugging. That's a girlfriend experience. That's what it's referring to. So other establishments will advertise, you know, a passionate service. And it's certainly the question I get asked most by a client who hasn't seen me before is, you know, are you passionate? Do you kiss? You know, that's probably the most sought after connection.
I didn't think professional sex workers did kiss. I thought that was the one thing they didn't do. That was one thing they saved for their special real relationships.
Yeah, absolutely. And I guess that's why these guys are asking. That's specifically what they're looking for. And I know that particularly younger workers don't offer that. And some of them do offer it, but it's at an extra fee. And then there's other establishments, mostly mature age establishments. So that's where all the women are, you know, generally over the age of 30. And it's something that stands them apart, is that tends to be the service that is a standard in those establishments, is that passionate service.
There you go, kissing and touching and affection, the most sought after thing. And this is a woman who has seen it all, folks. Trust me, there's not much Tammy hasn't seen. Have you ever thought about opening somehow an online help advisory column where people can ask you questions?
Yeah, oh, well, like I said, watch this space. So
I think you should organise it. Jess will put this article on our Facebook. You can have a look at it. And I thank you once again for your candor and your honesty, and I appreciate your time.
All right. No, anytime. You're welcome.
Okay. Are you working tonight? You're off.
No, I'm off tonight. So I've just woken up just for you.
Ah, Tammy, I feel special.
It's the kind of woman I am, is that, you know, you're never too tired, anytime, anywhere.
Good on you. Thank you, Tammy. I'll let you go now.
Excellent. If anyone does have any questions and you'd like to forward them to me, I'm happy to answer via email as well, of course.
Okay. All right, then.
Excellent. Thank you, Tammy. A great morning.
You too. Bye-bye. There you are. 133353 is the telephone number. This is The Night Shift around Australia, where anything can happen.